Welcome to the jungle. A very good Friday to you. My name is Jim Rome. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What an amazing weekend this is going to be. So much football action. Super wildcard weekend. We are all over it. Lots to get to. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you. All right, Alvy, maybe a decky, yeah? Going to the weekend the right way. In fact, no maybes about it. Let's do this. Welcome to the show. I'm going to front load today. I've got two interviews coming up in hour number one. Do not let that deter you. Start dialing 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up right now. 1-800-636-8686. You know to follow me on Twitter. Always follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. And you can email us still and always at Rome, R-O-M-E, at Habitate.com. All right, so the Friday edition of the show sets up like this. Coming up next segment, my guy JLC, Jason Lockenfora, CBS Sports NFL reporter. And again, super wildcard weekend. JLC is coming up next. Coming up at 40 past hour number one, the head basketball coach at Clemson, Brad Brown. Then, sometime in hour number three, the big head, James Kelly. He's going to pick all six games. In fact, I'll hit him up for a little bonus on the championship game on Monday night, because that's still set to come off. So we've never done that with the big head. Six wild card games, or six games on wild card weekend. So that'll probably go down at 11:20 Pacific time, maybe sooner. TBA. 1-800-636-8686. All right, let me start with some football. You know, it's not that long ago that the Houston Texans were building a bully. And if I'm starting with the Texans on a Friday before the weekend we're having, you know there's a good reason for it. So they were building that bully not that long ago. Remember, they were stacked on defense. Guys like Jadeveon Clowney, future Hall of Famer J.J. Watt. They had another future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins, an all-pro left tackle in Dwayne Brown. Then they drafted Deshaun Watson. I mean, this thing was setting up beautifully, right? You had a couple of fierce pass rushers, an elite wide receiver, a stud tackle, and a franchise quarterback. So if you're looking to assemble a roster, that's the kind of stuff that you dream about. That's what everybody in that league is looking to do. Get yourself elite players at those positions. And then it's not a matter of if you win a Super Bowl, but rather how many you're going to win. They were building that thing. They were building a bully and a monster. And the Texans have managed to do absolutely none of that, come to find out. Dwayne Brown shipped out. Jadeveon Clowney gone. DeAndre Hopkins traded for a couple of footballs. And now Deshaun Watson is reportedly pissed, really pissed at the organization. And my only question is, what took him so long? This has been a complete bleep show for years now. They're lucky that Deshaun is such a decent guy and a team player and a leader. They're lucky it hadn't already reached that point, because just about every other person on the planet in his position would have demanded a trade months ago. I mean, you remember that somewhat cryptic tweet from earlier this week after reports had emerged that Nick Caserio was going to be the new GM? At that time, remember, Watson tweeted, quote, "Something's never changed," end quote. It wasn't exactly clear then what that was about. Now it's a lot more clear, because now we know, according to multiple reports, team owner Cal McNair had told Watson that he would be involved in the hiring process for the GM and the coach. And then they went out and they hired Caserio without informing Watson. Not only did they not inform him, he reportedly found out about that hiring on Twitter. Now, I'm not going to say that that's a dumb way of handling things. I'll just say that's a moronic way of handling things. I mean, that is really asinine. There are so many layers to this tiramisu of stupidity that is the Texans ownership right now. Let me read a few lines from a JLC report back in October. Quote, "Specifically, owner Cal McNair has already talked to starting quarterback Deshaun Watson about the direction of the team going forward and solicited his opinion, according to sources with knowledge of the situation." It goes on, quote, While Watson will not be a formal part of the team that chooses the next coach, and McNair intends to hire the GM first, the owner does value very much the feedback of his highest-paid player. And sources said Watson has already advocated for Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. End quote. All right, so that there sounds like a pretty good plan. The owner wants to get a take from his franchise player as part of the process of determining who the next head coach is going to be. And then the player stumps for the one coach in particular, and it just so happens to be the guy who is the hottest coordinator in football. The guy who won a Super Bowl last year and is primed to win another Super Bowl. The guy who has helped mold Patrick Mahomes. So in any functional, well-run organization with competent ownership, I wouldn't say that it's a slam dunk that Bieniemy gets that gig, but he'd have to be at the top of your list. And then you go up another level when your franchise quarterback says, that's my guy. That's the guy that I want. I mean, this is easy. This is a no-brainer, except in Houston. Because not only is Bieniemy not poised to get that job right now, he didn't even get an interview with Houston. Let me repeat that. According to reports, the Texans have not interviewed Eric Bieniemy for their head coaching position. I mean, that's not just dumb. That is criminally stupid. He should have been on your list from the very beginning and should have been underlined after Deshaun Watson said, that's the guy that I want. That's my guy. Not only was he not on the list, these clowns didn't even bother interviewing him. Not only did the Texans not interview Eric Bieniemy, they're the only team with an opening to not interview Eric Bieniemy. So at this point, you have to go way out of your way not to interview Bieniemy. And when you do that, you're going way out of your way to offend your franchise quarterback. And for who? For what? Why would you do that? Even if you don't want Bieniemy as your head coach, you know what? Fire up the Zoom, interview the guy anyway. What's it going to cost you? A couple hours at most? And that way you keep your franchise quarterback feeling like you do give a damn about him. But instead, you don't interview Bieniemy, and essentially you're giving Deshaun Watson the big middle finger. No wonder the guy's pissed. Man, if I were him, I'd be screaming from the rooftops for a trade. I would find the highest rooftop there is and demand a trade nonstop until they did it. In fact, I would have been doing that months ago. I would have been doing that if I were Deshaun Watson when they didn't tell me they were trading DeAndre Hopkins. I'd be spray painting it all over H-Town after the coaching search debacle now. And then when it came to hiring Nick Caserio, according to Adam Schefter, quote, Watson offered input on potential GM candidates, but the Texans neither considered nor consulted with those endorsed by their franchise quarterback, end quote. So they didn't even consider this guy's advice. Awesome job. Really top-notch work. Oh, and it wasn't just that they met once or that Watson just referenced his thoughts in passing. Schefter says that Watson met with Cal McNair multiple times, that he didn't expect to be the one making the decisions, but he hoped that he could represent his own thoughts and the thoughts of the other players in the locker room. And still they ignore this guy. I mean, what a waste of Watson's time. You know, kind of like everything he's done in Houston since he got there. Because a guy this good should be having way more team success than he is. Instead, you've got guys like Watson and J.J. Watt just spinning their wheels, wasting prime years of their Hall of Fame careers, while the rest of the organization is a complete bleep show. Hey, listen, it's Cal McNair's team, right? He can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm not even saying that he has to consult with Watson on any of this. I would just say that it would be smart to make sure that your quarterback is on the same page and feels like his opinion does matter. You know, but do what you want. It's your team. But what you can't do is tell him that his opinion matters and that he'll have input and then just completely ignore the guy every step of the way. Allegedly. So if that really is how that went down, that is self-destruction of the highest order. So to recap, the team is consistently dealt away premium talent for pennies on the dollar because their previous head coach slash GM liked to do that sort of thing. They tell their franchise quarterback they want his input when it comes to hiring a new GM and a head coach. Then they completely ignore his input. Not only do they ignore it, they go way out of their way to disrespect it and make decisions on their own. And then after they do that, they don't bother communicating with him about any of the decisions they made without him. In other words, if you were setting out to piss off the best quarterback in franchise history and create an environment where you have to trade him, then you could not have done a better job. I mean, you may as well just dare this guy. Dare this guy to demand a trade and force his way out of town. Hey, and by the way, hell of a spot for Nick Caserio to walk into, right? Through no fault of his, the star quarterback is pissed, and now he's got to solve a serious problem that he didn't create. Caserio. By all accounts, Cal McNair tossed Caserio the keys to a Ferrari, but made sure to set that thing on fire before he did so. Sharp business strategy right there. Like, the whole point of firing Bill O'Brien was that you could get a clean start, a full reset. And yet somehow they made it even worse. And given what a disaster the Bob was, man, that takes work. That is not easy. That takes a ton of work. Well done. So now why don't you just give Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt away and just be done with it altogether? That is a disaster. Man, you know it's bad if I'm starting a Friday with a full-length, long-form rant on the Texans on Super Wild Card Weekend. Could not be handling that situation any worse than they are. 1-800-636-8686. In terms of the weekend, I want to talk about the Browns and the Steelers. I mean, Cleveland is not playing the best hand, right? They got to play the hand they have, but they're not playing the best hand. And then there's Juju disrespecting them. I've got thoughts, lots of thoughts on that. Indianapolis has to deal with Buffalo, and the Bills look loose. They look loose. They look confident. They look like they're in a really good headspace. I want to get into that. Speaking of headspace, there's not much space in any room that the big head walks into. His head is huge. James Kelly coming up sometime in hour number three. On top of all of that, an update on Manti Te'o. He's actually finally coming around to telling his story, allegedly.
Finally.
Not that we really care at this point, but I'll get into that. Let's get some reaction. At 143C1 tweets, the Texans are an amateur hour operation. Signed, having Christmas decorations still up. Wells in the 360, quote, the Texans ownership looks really stupid right now. Signed, people who still have Christmas decorations up. It's got me wondering if our lights are still up. Maybe. Y'all talking about me. The tree is gone, but I wonder about the lights. In short, I didn't take them down, so they might still be up. Chris in St. Pete tweets, all the Texans need to do is hang up some meaningless banners and decor to celebrate anything. Signed, the Colts and people who keep Christmas decorations on until March. All right, I didn't say that I'm going to keep them up until March. I said they might still be up. Sean, quote, it's not Jukebox Friday, but can Alvy play the Jeopardy theme in honor of the last episode of Alex Trebek hosting the show airing tonight? He can. He is.
Correct.
There you go, Sean. You ask and you shall receive. Sad day also, the passing of Tommy Lasorda. Tommy Lasorda was an absolute legend. Tommy Lasorda used to come in the jungle all the time back in the day and always showed up a certain way. You know, I was a kid in Los Angeles growing up as a Dodger fan, so I have a lot of memories, a lot of thoughts. Spent a fair amount of time with Tommy Lasorda, so I do want to get into that. Thoughts and prayers, that is very sad, the passing of Tommy. I told the story that I saw him not that long ago. I literally saw Tommy Lasorda in the David August studio. He was a David August client, too, and he came down, and I happened to run into him off chance, and my man was in all his glory. I mean, Tommy in his 90s, looked me up and down and F-bombed me right on the spot in a really endearing way, by the way. But even into his 90s, my man was still running it and talking junk and bringing the heat, bringing the fire. So Tommy passes away at age 93, so that is sad, and we'll get into that too. 1-800-636-8686. When we come back, JLC, Jason Lockenfora is my guest. We're going back-to-back in hour number one, but phone lines are open. Lots to get to. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
All you need to do is figure out exactly where you want to go with it. Pick up the phone, lob me a call, get on hold, get on the air, get racked, make a difference. And very simple process. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He is a key part of the NFL Today's coverage, tomorrow and on Sunday. Very good friend of this program. Co-host of Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. Co-host of the Baldy's Breakdowns podcast. Jason Lockenfora is my guest. JLC, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, buddy. Hope you are as well.
I am, Jason. It is a huge weekend, so we're a few hours away from the start. I got to ask you, there were certain times during the year where maybe we wondered whether or not we would get to this point. How are you feeling about this weekend, and how impressed are you that we got this far?
I'm pretty shocked. I mean, this was quite a needle to thread, 256 games in 17 weeks, excuse me, at this moment in time in our country. And look, there were going to be issues. There were going to be compromises made. There were going to be games that were played under far from ideal circumstances. I think everybody knew that going in, and frankly, there were far fewer of those situations than anyone at the league office or at the NFLPA could have fathomed. It worked better than anybody expected. You know, I feel for the Browns right now. I feel for Browns fans. That is a less than optimal situation. But viewing it through the lens we have to view it through, which is, you know, the sort of overall idea of actually crowning a champion and getting through this in some sort of a standard way, it's going to require teams to operate at times without people on the field or in the decision-making process or on the sideline who are critical to your operation, but for the sort of greater good and overall health of and well-being of the entire league, cannot take part.
We are talking to Jason Lockenfora at JLC. In terms of the playoffs, I'll get to that in a minute, but I want to actually ask you about a team that's not in, and that's the Texans. Back in October, you had reported that the Texans were going to involve Deshaun Watson in the hiring process for a new head coach. What has happened since then, and where does that stand right now?
That's what they told him, and as I reported back then, he did have preliminary conversations with ownership and, you know, made it clear that, you know, I hear great things about Eric Bieniemy. I'd love to have the opportunity to talk to Eric Bieniemy if you guys speak to him, and it, you know, I think he'd be great for me. And you know, I've heard a lot about him through Patrick Mahomes, and he was led to believe that he would, not a decision-making role, and not even necessarily a seat at the table, but that he would sort of be kept in the loop and you know, was given the impression that his voice matters. And the reality is they haven't interviewed Eric Bieniemy. I would be surprised if they interviewed Eric Bieniemy, in part because I don't think, you know, if that's not someone whose resume and whatever it has them inclined to hiring him, and by they, I mean new GM Nick Caserio and owner Cal McNair, then why interview him knowing he's probably not the guy or the direction we want to go in? And then now you're answering questions about, well, why wasn't it Eric Bieniemy? What didn't he do, et cetera? And they might not be able to skirt that issue now regardless, Jim. But it's a weird one. I mean, there were basically concurrent searches going on, one led by a search firm with a group of individuals and people interviewing with the hierarchy of that team and being told, we don't want to be the no-fun team anymore. We don't want to be New England South. We want to go in a different direction. At the very same time, the owner pretty much knows in the back of his mind that I really want Nick Caserio. I really wanted him a few years ago. And lo and behold, he got another New England guy.
Hmm. Jason Lockenfora joining us once again. All right, Jason, this morning also you tweeted that Urban Meyer is meeting with Jacksonville today to discuss that head coaching job. What is your sense to the overall interest on both sides?
It's significant enough to reach this point. And this dance has been going on for quite some time now. I mean, I first caught wind of it roughly 2 weeks ago and reported on it for CBS going into week 16. And at that point, the Lions were sniffing around a little bit too, but that seemed kind of a little bit more on the sort of periphery, a little more cursory, whereas this Jacksonville thing had some heat to it. And the question was, you know, would Urban actually decide that for, you know, yes, for family reasons, for health reasons, for lifestyle reasons, I'm willing to go in a completely, you know, I'm willing to change all that up and go back into this meat grinder. And honestly, the pro circuit is even more of a grind than college. You're not going to have the personnel advantages week in, week out that he had in the Big Ten or even in the SEC. Yes, I mean, could is it absolutely going to happen, Jim? I would not say that. But there is substantial interest on both sides, and he very well may put pen to paper with that franchise in the next couple of days and decide to do this. I know he's talked to people about potential staff. So, yes, it is serious, but given his health situations in the past, and he's going to ultimately have to make a final decision about, you know, whether what he's doing right now and that lifestyle is the way to go, or again, whether he's ready to reverse course and do something that is going to be far more rigorous physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all the above.
So we'll see. Jason Locken for joining us again. All right, so GLC, tomorrow's slate of games starts with the NFL today, and then you've got Indianapolis at Buffalo. You pointed out on Baldy's breakdowns that the Colts can run the ball now, and they seem like they've really figured something out with Jonathan Taylor. Let me ask you this. Is there a scenario where you could see the Colts holding on to the ball and eating enough clock to make the Bills sweat, or is that Buffalo offense just too explosive?
I've kind of talked myself in and out of this through the course of the week, but I do believe in the Colts' mindset. They're not really a dome team. They aren't the Peyton Manning Colts. This is a team that has a hard helmet mindset. They've been built from the inside out, offensive line, defensive line. It's not the precision pass game and the timing. Excuse me. It's more about bludgeoning you on the ground. Frank Reich's not interested in style points. Doesn't care about aesthetics. Doesn't have to be sexy. So, yeah, I mean, Jim, I think the equation is, can they get to a point where they're holding the ball, you know, 36 minutes, 35 minutes? Can they get their total number of rushes and completed passes, you know, somewhere a third north of 35 rushes? And if that's the case, you know, 15 to 20 high percentage completed passes. If they're able to do that against the Bills defense that was 19th against the run, then I do wonder, that's still a young Bills team, and do they feel the pressure a little bit? And could Josh Allen revert from MVP form to more of what we saw in the second half last year against Houston, or more likely somewhere in between, neither extreme? And can Phillip Rivers do just enough in the pass game? And then, and more to the point, will the Bills pick him off a couple times? Because they have some guys in the backfield who can do that, the defensive backfield. Although I do worry about their sort of cover two scheme, and it seems like they're fairly vanilla, and it seems the deeper we've gotten into the season and the more banged up that they've gotten, the more that teams are finding holes.
We're talking to GLC for another moment or so. Hang in there, GLC, you're almost there. And
yeah,
tell Copper,
Sorry, man. Tell Copper to
get you a glass of water.
Yeah, we'll survive.
I know you will, man. You're always going to play through. Really quickly, as somebody who proudly reps the city of Baltimore, what do you make of what you've seen from the Ravens during that five-game winning streak that they're taking into the postseason?
Well, I mean, I can tell you just from obviously living here and doing 4 hours of radio a day here, people are still kind of in wait and see mode. The last 5 weeks have been absolutely historic in terms of their offensive production on the ground. I mean, 1,337 yards in five games, averaging 6.4 a carry. It's pretty ridiculous. It doesn't happen in the pros. You don't run for 400 yards on a professional football team. But it's against the Bengals and it's the Cowboys and a bad Browns defense and the Giants defense that people thought was good against the run, but certainly wasn't on that day. And obviously, it's what can you do in the playoffs? I think if Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, continues to stick with the script that they've gone with the last five games, and even if they're behind by 10 or 13 or even 14, doesn't panic and continues with this three-headed monster of a rushing attack, that they find a way to win this game. I think it would be a high-scoring game. And it wouldn't shock me if both teams are scoring into the 30s and maybe one of them into the 40s.
Yeah, one bonus for you, since you mentioned it, 4 hours a day of radio, JLC. Like, I know you. I know how much you care about it. I know how hard you grind. But is it tougher than it looks, or maybe is it easier than you thought it would be? What's the radio experience been like for you?
Well, I love it, and I knew I would love it, and I love it even more than I thought I would love it. So it doesn't really feel like work, because I just constantly feel like the more I can educate myself, and I live and breathe this, and we do talk a lot of football, not exclusively, I mean, Orioles, Terps too, but the more I can sort of discover things through talking to people or research or stats that surprise myself, and I look at it as an honor to be able to then try to share that with other people here who have the same passion and try to make their fandom a little bit more informed and to have some fun too. So no, it is, I mean, I didn't take it lightly. And it is tough, but it's a labor of love.
It's a great approach you have. He is JLC, an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, a key part of the NFL Today's coverage tomorrow and on Sunday, and involved in all these other things too. Jason, great to have you back. Have a great night, and I will check with you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, brother.
You got it, dude. Appreciate you. JLC, he is a grinder. He's putting in the time, doing the work, as always. All right, so we'll break. When we come back, I'm going to change up on you. Like I always do, we'll talk some Clemson basketball. Brad Brownell is joining me. That's coming up next. And then we are wide open until hour number three, either at the top or in the middle of hour number three. Big head bets. James Kelly picking every game this weekend and the championship game on Monday night. So we got a lot to get done between now and then. First up, though, here is your bottom of hour number one sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, so my thanks to JLC. Getting ready for Super Wildcard Weekend. I've got open phones and lots of opportunities for you on the other side of this. But first things first, as promised, we are now joined by the head basketball coach at Clemson. He is in his 11th season as head coach. He was named head coach back in 2010, the recipient of 3 Conference Coach of the Year awards. He is the winningest coach in school history. Clemson is 9-1. They're number 18 in the coaches poll. They've got a big one tomorrow night. They're at UNC. Head coach Brad Brownell is my guest. Brad, good to have you on. How are you?
Doing good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. So it's been a little while since you and I have talked. So you're 9-1 now. You're ranked in the top 20. Bring me up to date. How you doing? And what's the mood like around the program these days?
Yeah, it's great. You know, we've got a really good team that has a lot of depth. We're playing 10 guys, double-figure minutes, and we've kind of extended our defense to where we're pressuring and picking up full court. I think that's really been good for this team, and I think, you know, this is a year when sacrifice is about as important as anything, both on the court and off, in terms of the choices that these kids are making with COVID and everything that's going on. So I think it's really fit our team, and so we're just trying to play a lot of guys, kind of run guys in and out, and our defense has been outstanding so far, just really proud of our guys.
In fact, Brad, that's where I was going to go next. I was going to ask you about those two very things, the defense and the sacrifices that the players are making. For instance, it's not just that you're 9-1 and that you're ranked. You also are the number one team in the country in terms of adjusted defensive efficiency. For the last 3 years, you've been really good defensively, but it seems like you've taken it to another level this year. How would you describe the defensive identity or mindset of this group?
Yeah, we've changed here this year. Because we play 2-point guards at times, and we have 2 little guys, and Alamir Dawes, who started for us last year as a freshman and got some good experience. And then we brought in a young man by the name of Nick Honor. And so those 2 guys are both kind of bulldog defensive guys that can pick up full court and really make it hard for the other team to initiate offense with rhythm. And so we've kind of extended our defense, tried to really be more aggressive. We're not a really big team. We don't have a shot blocker per se, and so even though we're a little smaller, we're just trying to keep offenses away from the basket as long as we can. And so I think the aggressive nature of our defense has been really good. I think our kids have really enjoyed it, and it also allows us to play more players, which I think in this year especially is really important. If kids are working really hard, practicing every day, and they're making all kinds of sacrifices to be able to play, You just want them to be able to get out there and have some fun and play. And so we noticed it right away. We made this shift in the summer. It was something that really took off with our team. And we've been fortunate that we haven't had to take any breaks with COVID. We've had good rhythm in our practices, and I think it's carried over to the games.
Brad Brunell is joining us, Clemson head basketball coach. You know, Brad, in terms of the players and what you're asking of them, as an example, Amir Sims was one player that was told he was going to play less. His response was, quote, "If you're not good with that, it says a lot about you as a player. At the end of the day, it's about winning. And if it's not, if you're not okay with winning because you're not getting a lot of playing time, something is wrong with you," end quote. I mean, what's that tell you about him as a person, that that's what his response was and that's what his takeaway was?
Yeah, for people that don't know, Amir is a great player. He was a, you know, second or third team All-ACC guy last year. He's our returning senior, just a guy that made a huge improvement from a sophomore to junior year. And I brought him in and I told him, hey, you know, I think you averaged 32 minutes a game last year as a junior. Your senior year, you might only average 27 or 28, but I think it's going to help our team. I think it may even help you at some times. And he was great with it. And I think in this year especially, you need some older players that have been through the wars with you that kind of, you know, really are your sounding board to the team, and he's a remarkable young man. He's got an unbelievable personality, you know, not only for what he does just with our team, but how he is on campus. He's going to be a great ambassador for Clemson one day, and certainly a big part of the reason why we're having the kind of success that we are.
You know, I wonder, Brad, you're having a lot of success. Like, in your background, in your experience, what's tougher for the players to deal with, success or adversity?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think, you know, human nature, when things are going well, it's challenging for all of us to keep our foot down on the gas pedal and still challenge yourself to work at a rate that you need to get better and to prepare the way you need to prepare. And so sometimes I think that can be more challenging than when you're struggling a little bit. I think people, when they're struggling, you know, your natural instinct is to go compete and go fight and figure it out. Especially if you've got any competitive nature in you at all, and most of the kids here do. But when you're having some success, it's and everybody's talking about you, and you're doing all kinds of interviews like Jim Rome, it's hard to kind of go back in there and keep grinding. And, you know, we're not a team that we have to grind. We're not overly talented. We're not, you know, we've won a lot of close games. We're going to be in a lot more close games. And so the preparation and the little things are the things that are going to separate our team from others.
I agree with you, Brad. I think that when things are going well, it is tougher to push yourself to keep grinding and keep getting better and better and better. That's why I asked that question, so I'm not surprised that that's the response. And then over the past few months, I've had numerous conversations with college and football basketball coaches who've talked about the added stress, the added challenges that their players have to deal with because of COVID. The ACC is tough enough year in and year out, but how much more challenging is it this year? And then how do you go about helping your players stay fresh mentally and physically?
Yeah, I think that's a big point, certainly with all of us. You know, one thing we did is I think you got to have tremendous relationships with your players. You got to be talking to them all the time, you know, about things well beyond basketball. And so just kind of checking the pulse of our team, we felt like, you know, we were going to let our players go home for Christmas to get 3 or 4 days away. They really hadn't seen their families very much. We've been going since the summer. And so I think that was really important for us. And our guys came back fresh. It's really helped us, but that constant battle of having a pulse of how your guys are doing, what they're dealing with, like we kind of already noticed we started classes back this week, and we can already sense a little more stress on our guys just with now all of a sudden, you know, we're back in school and there's more things going on, more responsibilities, and again, it's not a normal college experience. You know, they're not doing much else other than class and study hall and then meeting with tutors and then coming to the gym. Beyond that, that's about it. And so they've got to be unbelievably disciplined in their approach. And we've been fortunate. Our guys have been. And they've made the sacrifices necessary for us to be able to continue to practice and play and, again, not take a pause. And I know that's a little bit fortunate because you just can't be reckless in this. And I think, you know, you got to do the best you can with each decision you make and understand that it's going to have huge ramifications. And that's where our guys have really made the sacrifices necessary to keep us going. And, you know, anything can happen, and we can all get it at any time. And so when we do, then you got to adjust again.
No, it's so true. It is a big ask of everybody, and especially of young people. I've got a son in college, and we talk about these things all the time. And you think that you're impressing upon them the importance of this and the severity of this, and sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. But it takes everybody to understand and buy in. And then you've got North Carolina tomorrow in Chapel Hill. Of course, it was last season that you beat them in overtime to snap that 59-game losing streak in Chapel Hill. I'm curious, how different does this game feel now that you ended that streak then?
Well, it's just been nice to not have to be asked about it, you know, not only this week, but usually in the off season, somebody will bring it up to your attention, like, hey, when an alum will ask you when we're going to end that thing. And so to get that past this was great. It feels a little different this year, but as much as anything, just because of it, of the nature of this season, it's just a different year altogether. You know, they're not going to have many, if any, fans in the stands. And so you're really just kind of going in there and playing the other team. And that's really what every game is like. There's not much of a home court advantage anywhere you play. So it does feel a little bit different. But I'm certainly glad we were able to put that streak to rest.
No doubt. Clemson 9-1 on the year. They're number 18 in the coaches poll. They've got that game against UNC tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Their head coach is Brad Brownell. Brad, great to have you back. Thanks so much. I appreciate the conversation. Good luck this weekend.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Good talking to you, Brad. Clemson is number 18 in the coaches poll. And that's a big one right there. All right, so coming to the end of hour number one, 1-800-636-8686. Some quick reaction at Lauren Mudger tweets, War JLC doing bong hits on the Jim Rome Show. Yeah, I don't think that's what he was doing. Like I said, JLC is grinding out. He's got everything he does with the NFL and CBS and CBS.com. 4 hours of radio. He's got podcasts, multiple, plural. My man's not ripping bong hits. He's grinding. And sometimes when you hit it that hard, that's what you sound like. If you got to catch your breath, it's not necessarily because you're ripping bong hits. In fact, I'd bet my entire life, I would bet my life that JLC was not ripping bong hits while he was talking to me.
I've kind of talked about, excuse me, myself in and out of this through the course of the week, but it's not the precision pass game and the timing. Excuse me, it's more about...
I've been there. I know. And it was not the result of a bong hit. Then again, there is no cough button on a phone. You can't blame him. There is no cough button on a phone. Like here, if you're watching me right now on CBS Sports Network, I've got this bank of lights. If you want to see, in fact, you can't really pull in, but I'll read them top to bottom. Talk New York, Talk TV, TV Talkback Enable, and cough. The all-important cough button. That way, when I'm on the air, if my microphone is hot, or even if it's not, and it's off, and I have to cough, and I do sometimes on the air, that's what the cough button is for. The iPhone does not come equipped with a cough button. Maybe it should. Dave from Berea tweets, War JLC and Raider Mike having an actual hack-off. Why is this so unusual?
Excuse me, it's more about...
Maybe he swallowed wrong. Maybe there was something in his throat.
Excuse me, it's more about...
Maybe he's got a little tickle in his throat. Maybe he's sick. I don't know.
Excuse me, it's more about...
I don't know, but I know it's not a bong hit.
Excuse me, it's more about... And you don't... Excuse me, it's more about... And you don't... Excuse me, it's more about...
You know what it's more about?
And you don't...
It's more about you clones not looking for something that's not there. It's more about you clones not saying things irresponsibly. Like I said, I'm not sure what my guy was dealing with. I'm sure it's not serious. I know it happens, but I know it was not a bong hit. So don't bring that crap around here. Romy, JLC sounds like he was mid-bite in his meal while looking at his DoorDash delivery fee. Signed, Geoff and Lincoln. Oh, what, you mean like this? All right, good. Oh, finally, they're here. All right, let's see what I got. What? How much is my delivery fee? That's a hefty fee.
Excuse me, it's more about...
Let me tell you something. Do you have any idea how many times JLC has picked me up personally? Do you have any idea how many times he's done this show? Do you have any idea how many times he's done my TV shows? That's my guy right there. There's nobody I respect more than JLC, and I love the guy like a brother, man. Don't bring that around here.
Brother.
Carlin Prescott tweets, Unwar selling plasma to afford DoorDash fees. Drew in West LA. Come on, Jim. Watson doesn't want out of Houston because of the Texans. He wants out because DoorDash was having surge prices. I should have never have done that take. I should have never have done that take. Because initially, after I did that take, that's that video that went viral of that DoorDash delivery person who invited the customer outside to discuss her tip, which was a pretty good tip. So I did that, and DoorDash Delivery Nation came in, and they were up in arms. They were furious. And it was pretty interesting. Like, they're giving us a bad name. We love this work. We love this job. We know we're providing a service. So it all went pretty well. But then you always have that next phase. That next phase of you dopes that try to turn into something that it's not. And that's what's going on right now. Like Wells. Houston ignoring their franchise quarterback makes no sense. It's absolutely absurd. Signed, DoorDash delivery fees.
What the hell are you looking for?
Are their fees any worse than any of the competition? Apparently they are. Stay tuned.